Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl from the ISF and Currently Strange Films and Film and Stuff podcast and Deviant Legion, and very happy to be here tonight. Unfortunately, Rachel, my co-host, is not feeling very well, so she won't be with us. And she does send her regards, Stephen. But today, we're very, very happy to have Stephen Lack with us. Stephen Lack is a wonderful artist in that, but most people would know him from being the star of David Cronenberg's Scanners. And you've also done some other work too, but that's the one that most people would know. But because of his friendship with David Cronenberg, you were actually at the premiere of David's new film, Crimes of the Future, here in New York City. So just tell us a little bit about that and about the film, and just give us a nice recap of it, of the evening and what happened.
Okay, well, I no longer live in Manhattan like I used to, so, you know, I had to travel a number of hours on the highway to get there, and of course there's always a drama on the highway. I think there was a burning vehicle and all of that, but we had plenty of time. We had a cushion. And got to New York and changed, got ready. I mean, it was a red carpet event, but I'm so out of touch. I keep on thinking I'm going to be on the red carpet, and what am I going to wear, and how high should the heels be? But, and I went with my wife and my son, Asher, who's a musician. His band is Ravens and Chimes. You can find him online or Spotify or whatever. And his bride, who's an editor at Doubleday. And so we all met and went to the event. And it was great. A nice touch of New York glamour. It's nice to be on like a parapet looking down at the limos, the Escalades, and other equivalents, American beasts, idling, shiny and black, like the snakes in your dreams, and there you go. It was a great event. For me, it was a trip to see Robert Lantos. He's the producer, and he's a terrific producer. I've known Robert since I was at McGill University, and Robert was. Well, I didn't really know him at McGill, but I knew his product, and his product was the McGill Film Society. If I look at my profile in the annual, when I graduated, it was the only extracurricular activity that I was part of, was the Film Society. He had a great menu of films for us to see during the year, and as it turned out, I didn't even know that. I did a small film with a French-Canadian director, Gilles Carle. I don't know if you know who he is. And we did a movie together.
That's
called...
name for sure.
Yeah, he did... the movie that we did, Robert Lantos produced, and that was L'Ange et la Femme, The Angel and the Woman, a great little movie, shot in black and white, shot by Prota. I can't remember his first name. But he was a brilliant... He was the cinematographer of Montreal at the time, and they had to research to actually shoot it effectively in black and white and get the textures right, because nobody had been shooting in black and white in such a long time. Anyway, that was Robert's first film, or at least it's the first film that he admits doing, and that was great to see, because I checked out his IMDb. And another coincidence is today is June 7th. I don't know when this podcast is broadcast, but it's Louis Furet's birthday, and he's the star of that movie. He and Carol Lohr, who's a French actress, and she is one of the great beauties of film.
Absolutely. I know her work. I know some of her work. I can't think of it. Title offhand, I'd have to look at the IMDb, but I definitely have seen her before.
Oh, yeah.
No
question. She was in Victory with Stallone, I think. And
right.
She did Mort de Boucheron, and mm-hmm. she did another movie with Gerard Depardieu where she actually dressed down. Oh, take out your handkerchief. Préparez vos mouchoirs.
Oh, okay, the Pierre film. Yes, yes, I know that film. Absolutely.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. And she just posted online, today is Lewis's birthday. I should call him after this and, you know, bother him and remind him that he's getting older and I can't believe I'm talking to you not through a fucking coffin box. But there we are.
Say the least.
So that was the first person that I saw was Robert after the film. The film itself, you know, going to a Cronenberg film is like... you get all excited. You know you're going to see something that you haven't seen anywhere. You're sitting down in the seat, ready for the film to roll, and then suddenly you get the fucking thought in your mind, oh, my God, why am I here? It's like you're strapped in, and you know. You can tell. You can hear the echo of the screams or the shuddering of the other people on the roller coaster. You know, you're in the park, you're about to go on the ride, and you're just saying, I don't know if I'm going to put myself through this, you know? But David is at his best. I mean, you know, you can have ups and downs. One thing we do as artists is we're always comparing ourselves to other artists. One of the things you do is... as a Yid, you'll say, oh, my God, I'm 33. Look what Jesus did by 33. You know? and it's the same thing with you know, whatever your talent is. You think, oh, my God, look at Leonard Cohen. He was on tour at the age of 80. He was doing three-hour performances. You know, could I do that? Could I carry the ball that long, that fast, that far? And so you compare yourself to how other people are doing. And David has been dormant for 5 years. He's had his issues, situations, loss of his wife, other things that, you know, are difficulties. And, you know, for a moment, he said he was never going to do another film. And, you know, he has... so much talent, wisdom, skill, history, awareness. I'm so glad he didn't buy into the retirement rap and got himself motivated, you know. I mean, really, because the film from the first frame gets you. And it gets you in new ways. You know,
so one of the things that
flesh,
oh, go ahead, finish up. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's just a unique beginning to the film, and you know, a Cronenberg film is like having sex with a stranger. You keep on wondering why are you in this position.
So one of the things I wanted to ask was you know, David had quoted before Khan that he expected a lot of walkouts and that, and yet he gets a 7 to 10 minute ovation at the end with a couple of walkouts. How was the audience reaction to the film after the film was finished?
Well, first of all, it's New York. And
yeah, true.
Everybody that was there is of a certain level of flexibility and acceptance. And so I thought the audience reaction was excellent. I mean, but that's because I was feeling so good about what I had just experienced. And I was with my wife, and she loved it. So, you know, I mean, if anyone would have walked out, I would have thought, oh, maybe she's going to say, no, this isn't for me, right? But David didn't push any of those buttons. She has certain areas where she cannot watch certain movies, but this was just a great, great effort. I mean, it was a symphony of surrealism. It's the first thing I've seen on a big screen in a long time. The experience reminded me, I mentioned this to a few other people that were there, my son, and I said, you know, the film, watching the film, being subjected to sitting still for the 90 minutes or 102 minutes that the film ran, I said, it was surreal having to sit there, and it reminded me of what it was like to be in clubs, smoky clubs full of stoned hipsters, and the club having as a decor video screens. And you're seeing close-ups, whether it's in a sex club and there are close-ups of sex, or whether it's a junkie club or a music club and there's, you know, people like Debbie Harry talking to Glenn O'Brien, on a video screen, and you're walking past it, and then you see the people sitting there in the club, you know. And so there's that interrelationship between the media and your reality, and your reality is also a little bit abstract because you're in a club. And that's how I felt sitting in the theater. I was walking in and out of the movie, which was, when you compare, of course, it was surreal, but it's, you do it in a movie, if you're watching Star Wars, all of a sudden you're on a space scooter and you're zipping between the asteroids. But, this was different. This was alternative realities.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Now, I have been a Cronenberg fan ever since, of course, the release was They Came From Within, but the American release. But ever since that movie, and then, of course, Rabbit and such, all the thing that I love about Cronenberg is he is very, very much, his eye is very, very scientific. It's not, there's emotion there, but he just shows you what is, and you have to make the decision on how you react to it. And he's one of the few directors for me that each film takes you to a different place, not just visually or thematically, but emotionally also. You take a look at Videodrome, you take a look at Spider, which I think is one of his great films. But the humanity is always there, even though he is detached to a certain degree on how he presents it. Now, in terms of Crimes of the Future, and let's not forget that one of his earliest films was also titled that, but from what I understand, that's the only connection between the two of them.
That detachment that you talk about, it's almost an excuse. It's a cover-up.
Okay.
Because you're really dealing with an obsession.
Yes.
The people that he's focusing on, it's a close-up of an obsession. And as a result, the clinical aspect of it is contraindicated for the context of obsession, and that sets up attention. Hitchcock, on the other hand, will have a pretty woman being threatened sweating, or, you're in a nice, normal environment, but where are you going to put the shoe that's following you from the body of the person you just murdered,
Right, so, exactly, okay.
So you've got your normal environment, and then you've got your abnormal situation. So, when you mentioned Spider, all I can think of in Spider was the close-ups of Ralph Fiennes' hands,
Mm-hmm.
So, it's clinical, but it's not without emotion. It is really obsessive.
The other thing about Cronenberg that hits me is that a lot of people don't get his sense of humor, but there is humor there. From what I understand, there's a lot of Cronenbergian humor in Crimes of the Future, which maybe isn't laugh out loud, ha-ha, but it's sort of more sort of a small guffaw or something like that, or you're taken aback by a line. Did you find that there was humor in the film?
Very much. Very much.
Okay.
It was more satire and vicious satire at that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got a person who's doing surgery as a performance to manifest mm-hmm. their mutating organs, and you've got the people watching, and then you've got the analysts and the people that are promoting it, and how they're discussing whether it's pure or not pure as a performance. I mean, I'm in the art world, and I've seen that shit go down sideways and justify people's entire existences. So he has a few of those people in the film, analyzing the performances and their validity and their purity, and that I think is pretty satirical. At the same time, he doesn't break stride. There were a lot of laughs from people, but they were looking for the laughs. They had already read that there was going to be something funny, so I thought they were kind of shoehorning them in. But
okay.
You know, I don't laugh out loud too often anyway. That's why we're friends, David and I. We both watch the planet with tweezers and a glass.
Yes, and of course, that's one thing I do have to ask. Was David at the premiere? Did you get a chance to see him, or was he off doing other work?
He was tired after the screening, and so he didn't hang out at the after event. Vigo was there, and Kristen Stewart was there, and Léa Seydoux was there. So, and Robert Lantos. David, I couldn't find, and I said to Vigo, I said, where's David? And he said, well, he's supposed to be here. David's supposed to be here. And I said, Vigo, David and supposed to be are two conflicting things that shouldn't be in the same sentence. And he looked at me like, what kind of a putz? And then he got it. And so that was a bonding moment, because last time I met Vigo, I wasn't fully aware. I didn't really want to meet another actor, you know. I guess I met him at Eastern Promises or
History of Violence.
Yeah, but later on I saw some things that he did for David. He got him a beautiful portrait of, made out of strange materials, like a 6-foot portrait of David's head that Vigo commissioned, and since then I've learned that, you know, Vigo's much more than just an actor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And not that
well,
I'm putting
you know,
actor class. Kristen Stewart was unbelievable. I mean, they were both unbelievable. Everybody acting in that film was terrific. But Kristen Stewart, there's an erotic scene between Vigo and Kristen Stewart that is so great. I mean, I don't want to spoil it because of where it goes and how it begins.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so great. And it is also a parody. It's a lot of the film has got to be considered autobiographical. I mean, if Viggo Mortensen is playing the part of somebody who is a superstar in this underground performance world, and Kristen Stewart is a wannabe performer and latches on to Viggo, I mean, how many times has that happened to David in real life or anyone that's in the limelight? And the way he tells that story, the way he paints that picture, it is so great. I mean, it is really one of the terrific moments.
I'm sure, and I'm dying to see it. I got to be feeling a little better. I'm getting over a slight problem, but that's being taken care of. But I will get to see it. But the one thing about David that I've noticed over the years is that he retains a lot of people within his sphere. If you're going to be in his sphere, that makes you special. And I don't mean that in terms of, oh, it's so nice to be in his sphere, but that you yourself are special because David sees something in you.
Oh, you mean the other people that he works with? Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Or you're talking about me personally.
No, not you personally, but certainly you're within that sphere because you, of course, worked with David early on, and, of course, you were in Scanners and such, and you two are great friends. I remember you coming on a podcast and telling a couple of stories, and it's like everybody was just, like, agog at how well, you know, you two knew each other and how well you reacted toward each other, you know, in the telling of those stories. And that, to me, showed me a lot about David. You know, I've never met him. I probably never will. But you know, I see him as an artist. I see his movies. I see his projection of himself in the films. And that's one of the things I've always connected with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, I mean, Viggo, what is this now? Viggo's third film with him or fourth, I think?
I think fourth. Dangerous
Method too. Yes.
Yeah. Brilliant film.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous Method.
I can't think of the actor's name. Oh, go ahead, David. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stephen.
No, I was just saying that for somebody who is an atheist, he does treat the idea of religion beautifully.
Well, the thing about that, and one of the people I love in TV is John Michael Straczynski, and he also is an atheist, and yet religion and faith was so important to Battle on Five. The atheists that I know, I'm very, very much an Episcopalian, and the atheists that I know, you know, there's a lot of respect in terms of what we believe and so on and so forth. So that's not surprising, to be honest.
Yeah.
At least with a certain type of atheist, let's put it that way.
Did you ever hear the last Leonard Cohen album, If You Want It Darker?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of it. I am getting more and more to Leonard, and I know he was your cousin because of my former podcast partner, Stephen Ronquillo. And Stephen is a huge Leonard Cohen fan. And so he was the one that really – introduced me to Leonard Cohen, and of course Robert Altman too.
That last McCabe album of his is really A Man in Conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's terrific. It's terrific.
I'll have to check that out.
It's worthy of about five or six plays because he keeps on asking questions that you think he's answering, and then you realize, he's asking it again. He's given an answer that's completely different than the other answer.
Right. Well, just like anything, if you're wrestling with any type of faith or lack thereof, it's always mutable. It always changes. You're always on a journey. It never should be static, ever.
Well, if it's stopped, it's dead, and it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. You're probably dragging around the Pope's... never mind, colostomy bag.
you know, it's funny. I ran it from a rabbi in Midwood, Brooklyn. And I noticed him one time outside praying, and he was like pacing and this sort of thing. And I went over to Rabbi Newman and I said, you were praying, right? And he said, yeah. And he says, that's so much different than the way I was taught. Tell me about it. And I love the idea in the Jewish religion where it's a conversation with God.
Like, yeah.
come here, we need to talk, okay? And to this day, I pray like that. I'll go and have my cigarette and pace. I'm like, okay, we got to talk. Let's talk, you know? But,
yeah,
you know, that's another,
you know, you're in tune when
David,
you hold your cigarette. You know you're in tune when you hold your cigarette up to the sky and God lights it for you.
Oh, I'm going to remember that.
Give me a light.
By the
God,
way, I have friends of mine who are Jewish, and I was at the Bris. And after the Bris and all that, they actually asked me to give the child to the grandfather, to the Aaron character, and so afterwards, all said and done, I had to do phonetic Hebrew and so on and so forth. Steve's mother comes over to me and says, "You look like a Jew. You look like a rabbi. You eat like a Jew. Come over to our camp." One of the things they gave me, and unfortunately I lost it, is I had a plaque that Carl Kaper is an honorary Jew.
Oh, well, keep that hidden. Just kidding.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well,
so getting back to,
yeah,
to the film. So, of course, Viggo was there. Everybody was there except David. What other things do you have to say about the film or being at the premiere before we go on? Because I need to ask you about what you're doing, too.
Yeah. The ride was great. I just loved it. I'm hoping a lot of people get to see it. I think it's an important film. I think it deals with, you know, it's such an unusual take on everything. And Carol Spear did the designing, you know, staging.
Mm-hmm.
And she did an unbelievable job. It's beautiful. It's claustrophobic. It's atmospheric. It's just beautiful. There are so many characters walking in and out. There are so many tributes to great movies in the past, and I mean like A Touch of Evil. There's some moments where I feel like I'm looking at Orson Welles.
Wow.
There's a couple of other films. The closing shot. I can't quite place where I've seen that shot, you know, where the film takes on another texture. There's gastronomic delights in the movie. There are things that are revealed, you know, science fiction and horror in the old days when it first began, there was always like these long, drawn-out explanations of what the manifestations everyone was looking at and how it, you know, pertained or how it was going to grow and be a threat. But here the reveals are just so expertly done that things that you wanted to have answers to, they're revealed. They're revealed, but in their own time, in their own pacing. The pacing of the movie was phenomenal, I thought, you know. Yeah, it was just great on so many levels. It was really layered, and it was 20 years in the gestation period.
That's what I understand, that this was, what was the original title of this? Something, it wasn't Painkillers, but something like that. It started with a P, I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
I have to look.
Yeah, well, there's a line in there where one of the characters says, "Nobody feels pain anymore. I mean, how can you be alive? What's wrong with people that they don't want to feel pain? That they don't feel pain? They don't feel anything. They don't feel pain. I mean, this is a quick rant of one of the characters. I mean, it's a beautiful little insert, and it could float and exist all by itself. It could be a gift. It could be, you know." No, it's really a rich tapestry of ultra consideration, layered intelligence, storytelling by a master who's had 20 years and certainly the last 5 years to work it out. and it's just great.
And from what I also understand, that he's got other things already lined up. So that's good because, you know, I mean, his last film was Map to the Stars. Now, he wrote the novel, too. But Maps to the Stars was something I really appreciated also. I was, and I think I'm in the minority there. But to see him have such a success, because Crimes of the Future has gotten excellent reviews. And so it's nice, you know, and one other question I have for you, of course, everyone is saying that he's returning to body horror. And to me, I don't, from what I'm hearing from you, that's not the case.
Well, there are scenes of guts, you know, but they're borderline matte than glossy. There's an allegory to the guts rather than the guts for guts' sake. So
right, okay, gotcha.
Represent something other than, just a creature coming out and taking control.
Right, or viscera or whatever the case would be, right.
Yeah.
You know, you also consider this his most mature work? Because I also read that also.
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. The mature work of a troublemaking brat.
That's beautiful. That's friggin' beautiful. So, Stephen, I want to thank you for being on, but I also want to spend a little time with you in terms of what you're doing and how, you know, with all the artwork and everything that you continually seem to work on. And I know you've got some books and that sort of thing. Do you have anything happening now as far as your artwork and your painting and such?
Well,
what's going on?
I am compulsive, so I probably do in a week probably 8 or 10 paintings or pen and inks that would be worthy of reproduction or whatever. But I don't, well, I don't want to say any negatives. I have a show coming up in Montreal in October. That'll be a one-man show of paintings. I have another show coming up also in October in New Brunswick, Canada. Also paintings. I haven't selected the paintings, but I have about 200 to choose from. But what I was about to say is that I don't really have people organizing my work and putting it out there for me. So I just do it, you know? So what I'm saying is it's as if I'm making a film, but I am printing the film myself. And
right,
it's going
to
be up to others to collate that into, I just don't organized like maybe I should. I just finished a great book of 60 drawings called The Bunny Book, and it's terrible things that bunnies do to each other. Who knew?
Okay, I have to buy that. I love your pen and inks.
Well, I'm dealing with a guy at Burning Books, D.B. Berkeman. He does album covers and books on album covers. He's done about 5 or 7 books. And he wants to do my memoir and a book on glory holes. I was given an Acker Award, and that's named after Kathy Acker, or now it's just Acker Award because there was some conflict whether they had the rights to use her name. And it's an underground thing for the East Village, and they honored me a couple of years ago. They give it to like 30 artists a year, and they
right, okay.
And they it's Clayton. I'm so bad with names. Clayton Patterson. I think he's well known for having filmed the East Village police riots in the 80s. Anyway, Clayton.
Yeah, I remember those, actually. I worked at Carl Fisher at the time. I remember those writings.
Oh, yeah. So Carl Fisher, what a beautiful building. I used to go there with Louis Furé, who I did that other movie with, Angel and the Woman.
Well,
anyway,
I'll tell you, if you ever were there between 81 and 86 and went up on the mezzanine, we met. Because I worked from 81 to 86 there.
Well, yeah, we might have. We might have. I mean, I was only there. I don't play or read music. But I went there with Lewis to get some music, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, where were we? What were we talking about? D.B. Bergman album covers, pen and inks. Oh,
yeah,
the
your
holes.
Books and what's published and that sort of thing.
So I'll just talk to this to reveal a little bit of artist thinking. What does the artist really think? So what Clayton does as his award to each artist, if there's 30 artists, he prepares 40 boxes. And in the box, it's a certain dimension, you will make an original work of art. So if there's 30 artists and 40 boxes, you have to make 40 original pieces of art, and it gets put in the box, right? And each artist gets the work of the other artist, and then there's 10 boxes left over that go to institutions. Okay, so I was a little puzzled because I'm kind of anal retentive and I don't like to give up anything, let alone 40 original pieces. But, you know, a lot of the people are writers, so they did 40 copies of their books or whatever. And it's a great box full of treasures. I can't even go into who's in it or how or why. And I was going through it and I was thinking, like, well, geez, what am I going to do? Fallback is yeah, I had a couple of pads with about 40 pen and ink drawings in them, and I could put them in glacine envelopes like the way they used to distribute heroin in the East Village. Cause it
right,
is a
okay, gotcha.
Situation. But then I thought, oh, say, size of the box is about 11 by 14, and I don't want to spend a lot of money. I'm just going to take cardboard, and I'm going to draw what I would imagine glory holes to have been, right? You know,
okay.
Suck here, swallow this, blah, 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 right? And so I did it back. I know. I said, I got to do something subversive. I just have to maintain my profile. So I did about 20 of them. I couldn't get 40 done. And so I did the fallback. I did the pen and inks in the glacine. And then showed the 20 to Burning Books, and they want to expand it into a book because I can't imagine a gallery showing it. But, you know, that's one of the things. Another thing that's exciting that'll maybe be happening, and I'm going to knock on wood, and I do have real wood near me. I'm a lucky guy. And that is they've approached me to digitalize and re-release theatrically and streaming-wise and all of those ancillary things, Rubber Gun. So
Nice!
So that might
that's,
happen.
That's great news.
Yeah, that's supposed to happen. You know, I mean, I have all the materials. And I signed the papers. Now I'm waiting for them to tell me what they need. And there's been a lag, so, you know, I'm depressive, so chances are they'll come through. Hopefully I'll be there. You know. So
understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
So there's that. So there's two shows, the film, possible books, and the other book that I don't know whether I've talked to you since that came out. When Are You Coming Home? The book that has 60 color reproductions or maybe more of my paintings with an essay by Carlo McCormick. I don't know if you know who Carlo is. Yes, anyway, it's a great book. It's put out by St. Thomas University Zeno Optic Press. But digitally, it's so friggin' weird. Because it's in color, et cetera, it's kind of expensive to produce, and so they only produced 100 copies, and the response was very good, and we got commercial outlets for it in Canada. This is a university doing it, and they don't usually have a response to their books, let alone a demand
for
more. And we haven't, in the last year, it's been impossible to get another printing. Who knew that Amazon has reprioritized all the paper manufacturers to producing cardboard and paper of the weight that we wanted so it wouldn't look like a magazine has become unavailable, mm-hmm. at least in Montreal, where they're printing it. So that's just a bit of what's going on.
Well, I, you know, the other thing I have to say to anyone who's listening, our listeners, is that please, if you're on Facebook, please follow Stephen, because your Facebook page is just wonderful. Seriously.
That's my magazine.
And it is.
Yeah.
And if you don't know Stephen, he's got an obsession with cars. I love you. I love his ink and paper works. And just everything. And if you haven't noticed already, you've got quite a sense of humor, my friend. I love it. Okay, I can't think of anyone else who's doing a book on glory holes. It makes absolute sense for you. I don't know why it does, but it does.
Oh, they're really rude. They are really rude. So
nice.
You know, I mean, it might be a year until it comes out, but there you go. And by the time it comes out, of course, there might not be any people left. So we've never been at this juncture, you know?
That's true.
I mean,
that's true.
Today is Tuesday. In 2 days, they're going to start doing the trials. Going to
mm-hmm.
be for a lot of people. They think it's going to be a radical thing, but as far as I'm concerned, it's like everybody's waiting for Sam Irvin to be wiggling his jowls. It's going to be watching a Neil Young concert, you know? Yeah, there's going to be some outrage, and there's going to be some high-fiving, and yeah, you got that, nail the bastard. But the real deal is the other side is going to probably use it as a justification for paranoia and distancing from the human community. So we've really got some problems where people are defending the wrong aspects of themselves. And that's,
agree.
That's a shame, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean,
as far as I'm concerned, you know, my friends on Facebook and the people that I interact with tend to be more of the liberal persuasion, but I'm also very, very much respectful of other people's opinions. And I think that's one of the things we've really lost is the sense that someone deserves respect. Now, you know, if they're
the
going out on crazy.
The media itself is
tunnel
vision. You are looking
mm-hmm.
at the eye of a cyclops. You are not looking at something that has two eyes anymore.
Very true.
So,
very true.
So there is no there's no three-dimensionality to it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
The dynamic
very
of
true.
the information, the vector is monochromatic, no more color. It's monocular, no more three-dimensionality. It's a nightmare.
Mm.
And it's chatter.
It is.
It's compelling chatter. So they've figured out how to distract you. And we've used our wisdom and awareness to sell, you know, potato chips. And you just have to see the people and how overweight they are to realize maybe we should be selling them some other things, you know?
Yeah.
They seem to buy a lot of sneakers. Are they doing any walking?
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Stephen,
yeah.
We're going to wrap this up here, but I just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on. Let's give one more plug to Crimes of the Future. Just give me a quick paragraph on how good it is and why everyone should see it.
Oh, wow. Did you read the thing I posted? That
yes.
Nutshells it.
Okay, everyone go to Stephen Lack's page and read his review and everyone go see the film, because I guarantee you I will do so.
I sent the review to David, and he just sent me back one word, impressive.
Nice. So I just want to go very quickly and talk about what we're going to do on upcoming episodes. Now, of course, June is Pride Month, and on Thursday, which is 2 days from now on the 9th, Patrick Crane, who is a film writer and film historian out of Oklahoma City, is going to join me. We're going to do a commentary watch on a lesser-known film called Windows, starring Talia Shire and Elizabeth Ashley, and directed by the great cinematographer Gordon Willis. And then on Sunday, TC will be back with Rock This Town Radio, and he's going to focus on one hit wonders from the high school years. We have a number of things in the works. I know we will have a commentary watch on Saturday, but I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be yet, but that will also be for Pride Month. We've got more coming, but unfortunately I've been a little under the weather the last couple of weeks, and now that I have antibiotics and that, I'm going to be get back into the schedule. So by the end of the week, we'll have things scheduled in a much more style. But please join us on Thursday, and on Saturday we'll do a commentary watch, and on Sunday, if you like good music, listen to TC on Rock This Town Radio. And again, thank you so much, Stephen, for being on. Really appreciate it. You're just a great guest. I love talking to you, man.
Hey, and say hi to Rachel for me. Tell her to feel better.
I will. Absolutely. Okay, well, listen, thanks a lot for being on, Stephen, and we'll talk to you soon.
Talking.
And everybody, go see Crimes of the Future, please. And let us all now say good night. Good night, Stephen. Thank you very much. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Glad to be here.